Welcome to Hit It Here Talk. I am Mariners Post. Today we are joined with Seattle Alums Nation and special guest Keaton Gulogli, the Modesto Nuts announcer. How you doing, Keaton? Thank you for joining us today.
Hey, yeah, you bet. Doing well. Just getting ready for another ball game tonight.
It's great to hear. Of course, the Modesto Nuts are highlighted by Mariners' number one prospect, Jarrett Kelnick, and the recent promotion of Logan Gilbert and Kyle Raleigh to AA. And I think Seattle Alums Nation wanted to ask the first question.
Well, yeah, I've heard this story a few times, and I've heard people who are really interested in it. Can you tell us about the players only, Kyle Raleigh and Logan Gilbert, the players only meeting they had?
Yeah, so Rob Marcello Jr., the pitching coach in Modesto, coined it the truth meeting between those two guys. And it was a fascinating story that I was told by Rob the first week of July while the team was in the midst of their run with six consecutive scoreless starts. It's one of those things where I'm talking to Rob, asking him about why the team is pitching so well. And after a few follow-up questions, we kind of got into this truth meeting and started talking about it. And it's a fascinating story because, A, it had major implications on the field itself. B, it's between two of the top prospects in the system at a very formative moment for the both of those guys in their first full professional seasons. And C, it's an opportunity to kind of draw a line from something that happened on the field that was really, really impressive to see through those two guys, through the pitching coach, Rob Marcello, through the manager, Denny Hocking, and all the way up to Andy McKay, the director of player development. And, you know, it was fascinating to watch because after I heard the story, the initial question is, wow, why is there an environment here in A-ball, you know, where a couple of young 20-year-olds can really hash things out and be honest with each other and provide constructive criticism in a way that doesn't just come at somebody, but allows guys to grow and to be better. And that was why the story was so fascinating. And myself and Lookout Landing, Kate Prusser, and I worked hard on that story to be able to bring it to life so that Mariners fans could really see what was going on down here. Because this is new stuff. I mean, this is a newer regime. And when you take over an entire organization, it takes a while to get your people in and get people to buy into that process. And this was an example to show people that the kids are buying in, and there are a lot of examples of this type of thing happening. This was just a very specific flashpoint that allowed us to tell the larger story.
Yeah, that really is.
It really shows the leadership.
Mm-hmm. I saw a picture. I think it was at the end of a game. I think Cal Raleigh probably hit a home run during that game. I mean, he hit a lot of home runs, but it was the game before Logan Gilbert's start. And they were going over the game plan for the next game, for his start tomorrow. And it was just amazing to see, like, the attention to detail that Cal goes through and the leadership he brings to the team.
Yeah, that was caught in the dugout, as you said, late in the game. Cal did have a good game that day, obviously, because he did for three straight weeks before he got promoted. But it was interesting. It was a blowout. The Nuts were winning. They were only a few outs away. Sure, you could be sitting there and tossing seeds into a cup or interacting with fans or just relaxing, goofing off with your teammates. And there he is sitting with Logan. And that's not a, hey, we got to hurry up and get our work done. This is a, hey, let's go through the process again. And you can see Logan in that moment holding a baseball with one of his pitch grips. And so, you know, you can tell that they're visualizing going through the game plan that they've already developed. I mean, it's already there. This isn't them doing their homework the night before. This is them double checking their homework, going through, visualizing it, getting it into their body. And that's not the only time I've seen Cal do something like that. Back in May, the first time he hit multiple home runs in a game, first of four times, but first time he hit multiple home runs in a game, he had been DHing. It was a Sunday day game. We were going to be on the road the next day, but I walk into the clubhouse. I'm dropping off the box scores to the coaches, and lo and behold, who do I see in the weight room at that moment? But Cal Raleigh, and he is going through his workout. He's getting a big leg day and doing squats after he hit those two home runs that day. So to see a guy, especially so young in his pro career, to be able to push that extra mile at that point to get himself prepared to help his teammates was fascinating to watch. And it's a big reason why he's up at AA right now.
Yeah. That's what major leaguers do. It's just hard work and preparation. And
yeah,
Kyle Raleigh is really showing it. And speaking of Kyle Raleigh, I had a question. So when I watch the highlights of the games and I watch Kyle Raleigh's home run, you of course have the what I call the Beef Boy song. It's a highlight, and I just wanted to know, like, did you make that up, or when did you start doing the Beef Boy song?
Yeah, so I am. That is not really me, right? I'm not somebody who's going to do a lot of that kind of stuff on the broadcast. I'm more of a facts first, and you just happen to realize that I'm talking about it, but I'm highlighting the game. So that's kind of my broadcast philosophy. But in early July, I was in the clubhouse talking to guys working in mining stories, and Cal mentions to me, "Oh yeah, me and Keegan McGovern nicknamed ourselves the Beef Boys during spring training." And I was like, "Really?" So I asked Keegan right at that moment. Somebody else verified it right away also. And I was like, "Oh man, cool." So that was July 2nd. That night, Jared Kelnick hits a home run. And on the very next pitch, Keegan McGovern hits a home run. So I go to interview Keegan McGovern the next day. And at the end of the interview, I asked him about the nickname, the Beef Boys. He tells me in that moment that Cal Raleigh actually had come up with a Beef Boys parody anthem, but didn't know what the name of the song was. So I go out the next day. So I interview him the 3rd, go out the next day on July 4th. "Hey, Cal, what's this Beef Boys parody anthem?" Well, he would only give me the song, Drift Away by Doobie Gray, and the chorus, which is what you heard on the broadcast. And they told me they would only start giving me lyrics like later. And I was like, "All right, cool." So I walk up to the press box. I put out on Twitter that I've got the song that they parodied, and I'm allowed to give the lyric, the chorus, if one of those two guys hits a home run that night. Mm-hmm. Well, lo and behold, that night, the team hits 6 home runs. Cal Raleigh hits 1. And so I just say it. I just say it. I don't sing it at that point when he's coming around 3rd base. So now I've got that. And then a couple of days later, he hits 2 home runs. That day, I tried to sing it after both just because it felt right. It came off okay. And then he hit another one 2 days later. And that one, Kate Prusser of Lookout Landing told me, sounded kind of like the guy who hadn't had enough to drink at the karaoke bar, which is definitely the way I felt while I was trying to put it out. So after that, I tried to practice it to the song. I was like, "All right, if I'm going to do this for Cal and for Keegan, then I need to like make sure I do it right." So I did it. I practiced to get the chorus that he had come up with to sing it right. And well, he hit another 3 home runs before he got called up, and I was able to belt it out after that. And, you know, he's promoted now. It's kind of retired or dormant or however you want to call it. But, you know, it was a fun thing. And it was a thing where, you know, I was able to highlight a guy and something they did. And it, when a guy is cranking out home runs the way he did, he hit 15 home runs in 24 games. At that point, you're allowed to come up with your own home run call. So that was more Cal than it was me, anything else.
Okay, he was on an absolute tear before game promoted. I think, didn't he win Cal League Player of the Week like 3 times in a row?
Yes, he did. The final three weeks before he got promoted.
That's insane.
So are you going to have to make one for Julio when he gets promoted?
What's that?
You should make one for Julio when he gets promoted. Well, honorary Beef Boy.
Well, only if he wants it, only if it gets approved by Cal and Keegan. And you know what? I'm sure Julio's going to have his own nickname and his own personality. So I'm sure he'll have something different if he goes on a tear like that.
All right. I think Seattle Organization wanted to ask the next question here.
Well, yeah, people wanted to know how to become a broadcaster. That was one of the biggest fan questions.
Yeah, it's really, really hard. And I would only go into it if you feel like you can't absolutely do anything else. First and foremost, this is a business about reps, networking, treating other people with care and class and professionalism. And everybody has a totally different story. Every big league broadcaster has a different story from a different big league broadcaster. Every NBA broadcaster has a different story. So there's no individual story. But for me personally, it was a situation where I was at a university outside of Chicago, which is my hometown, had an idea of a few things I wanted to go into, decided after my freshman year, I didn't really want to do any of those. So as I continued to think and try to figure out what I actually want to train myself for the rest of my life, kind of hit me one day while I'm sitting in my human resource management class daydreaming. Hey, you know, I know sports really well. I love telling stories and I'm really good at it. Maybe I could go into sports broadcasting. well, if I do that, I'm going to have to transfer. And so I did. I transferred to Valparaiso University in January of 2009, put my head down and just signed up for everything I possibly could at our radio station, at the newspaper, and at the television station, and just worked my tail off the whole time. Eventually got a job with the Green Bay Bullfrogs in 2011, where Mitch Haniger was actually the center fielder for 2 months. Wow. On that team. And that was my first opportunity to start doing some pro, it was my second opportunity doing some pro play-by-play, because after my junior year, I had worked in indie ball as a number two. So from there, I went back in 12 season with the Lansing Lugnuts. I got the Michigan State job in 2013, which I've now done for 7 seasons. The following summer was the year I got the job with the Kane County Cougars in 2013. I was living in Chicago with my family, making $500 a month. From there, I have got the Modesto job in 2014. So it's been this is now my 6th year out in the California League. But yeah, you know, it took me a long time to land a number one job. And I worked for a long time as a number two with other guys who are really, really good. And I was able to learn from them. But bottom line, when you're first starting out, it's just about turning the TV down on the game you're watching and trying your hand at play-by-play to get a feel for it. And then it's listening to as many broadcasters as you possibly can. You know, Vin Scully once said he never listened to any other big league broadcasters, but that's Vin Scully, and he's the greatest of all time to do it. So for me, I have just studied as many broadcasters as I can, and it kind of comes down to a Mad Libs strategy. So I want 10 different ways to describe a ground ball, because each one is unique. Is it to the left of the shortstop? Is it to the right of the shortstop? Is it hit hard? Is it hit on a hop? Is it a true ground ball where it never comes off the dirt? You know, those kind of details and nuances are the things that really bring a game to life when somebody is not listening to it. And then on top of that, learning how to just tell a story, you know, with compassion, getting to know people and getting their trust so that you can share their story to other people. And that in turn helps to build their relationship with the fans, which is what this whole thing is built on. This whole sports industry is built on that player relationship with the fans. You want to root for somebody. You want to root for your team. It's my job to tell you why this guy is interesting and why you should be, it should be rooting for this player. So it comes down to reps, a lot of hard work, and, you know, networking, treating people with care, compassion, professionalism. And ultimately, you may or may not reach your goal in this business if it is to reach the highest level. But if you work hard, you might get a shot. But if you don't, bottom line, it is a ton of fun to be following these guys day in and day out and watching them grow over the course of a season.
Yeah, that.
Your biggest influence in the announcing business or broadcasting business?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think the first two guys I would think about are Adam Amin and Wayne Randazzo. Adam Amin has done a ton of different stuff, including some NBA playoffs for ESPN Radio, college football stuff, including the national championship game on the MegaCast. He's a guy that graduated 2 years ahead of me at Valparaiso University. I followed him into one of the indie ball jobs I took, and then I followed him into the pro job at Valpo after I had graduated. And, you know, he and I have been talking broadcasting for a long, long time. And I have a lot of his style in me, and he has a lot of my style in him as well. So he's a guy who's done a lot of things for me in my broadcast style. And then Wayne Randazzo, who's now with the New York Mets, is the number two. I worked with him in Kane County in 2013. And, you know, he helped me get this Modesto job even before he had gotten to New York. And you know, he's been able to critique my tape, and I've made major strides on the air because of his critiques. I've been able to network further and get to know more people in the business because of his advice on how to continue to network, where to reach out, what to do, and how to move forward in this business. So, you know, those are two of the guys that initially just come right to mind that have gone above and beyond to try to help me in my career, not only to be better on the air, but also to network and to continue to push myself to get to the highest level in this business.
Who have been those big, well, how big have those connections been in this business to like know people who know people and get you those connections?
I mean, it's everything. Your relationships in the broadcasting industry are everything. And, you know, it's a very, very small group of people that get to broadcast games. And it's harder to be a Major League Baseball broadcaster than it is to be a Major League Baseball player. It's 25 active roster spots every day. There's a 40-man roster for a big league game or for a big league team. And, you know, a 10-year playing career, is a huge deal. I mean, that the guys don't get to do that very often. While on the other side, you have two, three, maybe four jobs per big league team that I'm striving for. And those guys hold on to those jobs for 20 and 30 years, as they should. So it's a really, really small percentage of people in this world that get to do this job. And as you get to know more people, they tell you how they do it. And it's just learning from them day in and day out. And once you kind of get to know somebody a little bit, you can start asking them some more questions. You see them do something in the way they call a game. And now you can ask them how they did it, why they did it, what they were seeing in that moment, what they were feeling in that moment. And it just makes you more prepared if you ever do get a shot at the highest level.
That's really fascinating. It seems like the broadcasting industry is like, it just takes a lot of perseverance and hard work and a lot of building relationship with others, is what you've said. That's really fascinating. And I know a lot of kids' goals are because they love sports, want to be a broadcaster. And this is just really good insight of what you have to do. Thank you for sharing all this.
Yeah, you bet.
I want to jump ships a little bit and talk about, since you're on the Modesto Nuts, like, I guess, team, kind of, there are some major league rehabs that come along, like J.P. Crawford, Gerson Bautista, Sam Tuivailoa. Do you, like, get to talk to those players? Do you get to know them a little bit? Because they're only there for a few days.
Yeah, I do. I had a chance to interview Crawford, had a chance to interview Tuivailoa while they were here, talked to Bautista a little bit. It's always fun when those guys come in. I usually give them a day or two to kind of get settled, get to know the guys, get a couple of games in. I have a chance to just kind of talk to them off the air, get to know them a little bit. And then I like to try to sit down with them and do an interview. And it's a lot of fun to talk to those guys, get their perspective. You know, the thing about when J.P. Crawford was here, the thing that stuck out so much beyond the power, which we got to see, and the arm, which you guys just got to see in Seattle the other day, and his defense, was just his relationships with the players. I mean, this is a kid that was traded in the offseason. He didn't have much time to get to know other people in the organization. You know, he's still a young guy, even though he was a high school draft pick and such a high draft pick. He's been a pro for a while now, so he's very, very experienced, very, very mature. And to watch him interact with the other players on this team down in A-ball was so impressive. He had such a relationship with all of the guys and had fun while he was here and in the moment. It wasn't a big league situation where he's just, well, this is just a box I have to check. It was him being very present with the players and in the game and with the coaches and that sort of thing. And the same thing for Tuivailoa. You know, that was a long, long rehab for him after the Achilles injury last year. And talking to him about working with Cal Raleigh, some of the things he said was, you know, Cal was like a sponge. You know, Cal was asking him questions, trying to get better. And Sam noticed that and pointed to it. And that's another example of what Cal is doing in the organization right now. And it's another example of how when the big leaguers come through on rehab, they're able to impart some of their knowledge on these guys. And it helps. It gets a little wind into their sails as they go through the slog of the minor leagues.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. Do you like interview all the players, or do you like kind of have like scouting reports on them? What do you like? How do you interact with the players like daily?
Yeah, I mean, I've got everything I've got to do. There's a lot of extra minor league tasks that I have to take care of at this level. So that's my first priority, getting the game notes done, getting the roster moves out, getting the starting lineups out, writing post-game recaps, all of that kind of stuff, and assisting in the front office wherever they need. But the interaction with the players is, while I'm upstairs calling a game, if I see something interesting, I can go down and ask them the next day. If I read an interesting nugget in an article that's more big picture about baseball, I've got a clubhouse filled with professional baseball players and coaches and a manager who was in the big leagues for 13 years, and I could ask their opinion on it. Now I'm able to share it and tie a big picture baseball question down to A-ball and down to the Modesto Nuts. And other than that, you know, in a lot of ways, we're colleagues. We're on the bus every day together. When we're on the road, we're sitting in the same hotels. We're eating at the same fast food restaurants late at night. And, you know, at those hours, like, I'm not asking a guy a question where I'm hoping for an answer that I can use on the broadcast while we're sitting on the bus at 6 a.m. It's just not what we're going to do. And at that moment, you know, we're just two people who are riding along the bus with big league dreams, and eventually we're going to get to the next town and we're going to get ready for the next game, and you just go through it. So, you know, you get to know the guys on a personal level. Sometimes you get to meet their parents when they come in in from town or in from out of town. And then, you know, it's asking guys very pointed questions. When I want something on the record that I'm going to use on the broadcast, I'll tell them, hey, I have this question for the broadcast. Can I use this story on the air? Because, you know, ultimately, if somebody doesn't feel comfortable with something being shared on the air to the listeners, then I'm not going to do that. I'm not an investigative journalist. I'm here to tell a story about the game, about the season, about the players, and tie it from day one to day 140 to the day they get to make their major league debut, hopefully in the future.
Yeah. So of course, Modesto has Mariners number one prospect and MLB number 24 prospect and Jared Kelenic. And he was in a little bit of a slump earlier in the year, but it seems like he's really picked it up in July. What have you seen from Jared? Like,
all right.
Yeah, so I'll just start from the top on the scouting report on Jared. But Jared Kelenic's a kid who's 20 years old, big power from the left side. I've seen him hit some moonshots in his time with Modesto. And he's gone through some of the ups and downs right now in A-ball. He's getting hit. He's getting pitched very tough. And this is part of the reason they promote a guy like Jared after he had proven he was too good for the South Atlantic League. And you know, we've seen some swing and miss stuff on the secondary offering. We've seen him get beat on some down and in breaking balls and from left-handers as well. So, you know, he's working through some of those ups and downs now. And this is the whole point. This is what the minor leagues are for, to hit those progressions and meet more mature pitchers who have a better handle of how to work an opposing hitter and really exploit their weaknesses. To see him try to smooth some of that out will be another step for him as well, to be able to handle the ups and downs, because, you know, he was playing in a lot of the big showcases and tournaments while he was in high school. And those are much more supercharged games than you have at this point in the California League, as you run through a small crowd Tuesday or another hot day over a weekend, wherever you are in the Central Valley. So, you know, he's trying to work through some of those things, and we'll see as he continues to iron it out how he's able to adjust. But the tools are there. They're very, very loud. He's got great speed. He could absolutely be a true five-tool player. There's all there. And, you know, he's raw like most 20-year-olds are. And it's been fun to try to watch him try to work through some of these ups and downs. And he's got another 5 weeks or so to make an adjustment. And at some point, I'm sure he's going to get red hot before the end of the season.
Oh, and when he's red hot, I don't think he's a better outfielder in the Cal League than Jared Kelenic. I think Caleb's Nation had the next question.
Okay, and who is another prospect that you've seen in the past few years who isn't currently in the MLB and is currently sitting in Double A or Triple A who you think can make their way up to the big leagues later on this season?
Yeah, I mean, some of the first guys that come to mind are some of the louder names. You know, a guy like Kyle Lewis was really impressive here, even though he was fighting through injury. Evan White is another guy that was really impressive to watch as he came back off injury at the beginning of last season. So, you know, those guys are two legitimate guys for sure. Donnie Walton is maybe an interesting guy that people haven't heard a ton about. He has been a ranked prospect the last couple of years, but, you know, he's hitting for a little bit more power now at Double A. He's a stocky, strong kid. Who's in left-hander Ray Kerr, a guy who was an undrafted free agent, but ended up getting signed in 2017. He's a long, lanky kid who's got a super high metabolism. So he's never really been able to gain weight, but the strength and conditioning coach, Michael Sadler, last year down in Clinton. Sadler is still the performance coach now here in Modesto. And yeah, they figured out a plan. They figured out a way to strengthen him, get him stronger, and allow him to start adding velocity. And it hasn't just come from adding muscle and strength, which he has. And he's had to eat 5,000-6,000 calories a day to gain weight and actually add weight and strength and muscle to it. But it's also come from more flexibility. It's come from engaging more of his entire body and a slight tweak in his mechanics. And he's been able to go from a guy who was 89-92 when he got signed in 2017, who's now coming out of the pen in the mid-90s and hitting 100 for the first time in the strike zone on the 25th of July. So Ray Kerr, a big flame-throwing left-hander coming out of the bullpen, who's a very interesting prospect right now.
All right. I think me and Seattle and Jay should talk about how the trade deadline and, of course, Miley didn't get all the trades and involved in any kind of trade before, like, Miley was kind of like a hug watch moment.
We had a couple of those guys last year. Bryson Brigman was a guy traded to the Marlins in the middle of the season. We had Seth Elledge, who was traded to the St. Louis Cardinals for Sam Tuivasa. He was the closer with the team, and yeah, you know, those are always big moments for Elledge. He was a guy who was a big part of the bullpen. He was the closer, a guy his teammates really, really loved. And yeah, after he got traded, they actually taped his number up in the bullpen kind of as a memorial since he left. So yeah, you know, it's always kind of a big moment when those guys get traded. It always happens really, really fast.
Okay. We're going to try a new one.
Okay.
You can exit now.
Announcing so much, why do you like doing this? Like, is it just always been a dream of yours? Like, what is your advice for kids that or people that really want to do this?
It was a dream that started when I was 19 while I was in college, and I didn't really know what I wanted to go into that at that point. And the real motivating factor for me to get into broadcasting was to tell stories. You know, I've never really been motivated to do big sports talk hosting or that sort of thing. The thing I really love about play-by-play is you're there in the moment with the game, and you're the first person who gets to try to caption and put a moment into context. And it comes from a lot of hard work, just getting to know guys, telling stories, and the ability to tell the stories for the first time on the air, introduce those guys to the fans and help build that connection from the fans to the players and to the team is incredibly rewarding. And just getting to see the guys grow every day and get better, especially in the minor leagues, because guys changed lightning quick down here, is really a lot of fun. But bottom line, getting to know guys, telling the stories every night about these guys and building that connection from the players to the fans is really rewarding.
All right.
So who's been a prospect who you've watched grow up and kind of be promoted, and have you seen any prospects that you've directly called or announced or broadcasted who have made it pro?
Yeah, I mean, we've had a lot of guys come through here in particular, and over the course of my time, whether it's with the Nuts or some of my other teams that I've worked for or opponents, you know, Trevor Story is a guy that came through here in 2014, my first year in town, after he had struggled in 2013 and really was very, very impressive. And now he's up in the big leagues making all-star games. You know, a lot of those guys on the Rockies team right now came through Modesto, Raymel Tapia, David Dahl, Kyle Freeland, all those guys played here in Modesto. And even guys like Mike Talkman, who's hitting some home runs right now with the New York Yankees. You know, I saw him in 2014, right after he had been drafted out of Bradley, and he was just a little slap hitter. I mean, he was clearly a guy who had great ball to bat skills, but just didn't hit for a lot of power, and he changed his swing, and now he's a Bronx bomber and helping to fill in for the Yankees as they've had all of those injuries. So he's been an interesting story. You know, I had a chance to see Noah Syndergaard in 2012 when he was 18 years old in his first pro season, and just watching him develop and learn how to pitch when he had a crew cut, short hair, and he was a very timid guy because he hadn't really found himself yet. So yeah, there's been a lot of guys that have come through, and every team has two or three guys that are eventually going to make it to the big leagues at least. And usually it's closer to five or six guys that at least get a cup of coffee from each team at this level.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Also, I just remembered that Jake Schneier, is that how you say it?
Shiner.
Jake Shiner is on the Modesto Nuts. He was traded for earlier this year. And what is it kind of like to, like, have a new person that gets traded and, like, he is in the clubhouse and meet a bunch of new guys and you have to meet him? What is it kind of like for, like, a new guy to come on? Also with promotions as well.
Yeah, well, for a guy who's traded, it's much different than for a guy who's promoted, because a guy who gets promoted, is really excited. Oh man, all these friends that I haven't had a chance to see for the last couple of months. It's like a reunion. But for a trade, you know, especially from an NL East organization to an American League West organization, Shiner had no interaction with any of these guys before. So it's kind of like a first day at school situation. Hey, how are you? This is my name. This is where I'm from. And you slowly start to get to know guys. And then after a few days, you start to see them get a little comfortable, and then they do something really cool on the field, or they hit a home run, and now all of a sudden they're off and really starting to find a rhythm. And you know, Shiner is just another guy in the clubhouse now who's doing some really good work, and a guy who's working on some adjustments and has a very bright future.
All right, Seattle Adams Nation, do you have a final question here?
Who's been the most impressive outfield prospect? You've seen many, many names come in and out of Modesto. You've seen Bishop. You've seen – you have not seen – have you seen Fraley? I don't think you've seen
Fraley. No. He was traded already at Double-A.
Yeah, you've seen Kalanick. You've seen Lewis. Who's the most impressive prospect defensively and offensively in both?
Man, that's a really tough question. David Dahl in 2014 when he was here was really, really impressive. Super fast. Great arm and great contact and power. Kyle Lewis was really impressive, even though he wasn't at 100% as he was working back from all of his knee surgeries. Braden Bishop is probably one of the top guys I've seen in recent seasons. I know he's on the injured list right now, but he was a guy who, when he got to us in 2017, it was right after he had made an adjustment to lower his hands and not to. I mean, it was part of the launch angle revolution. So he was trying to get a little bit more loft on his balls, but instead of trying to get it up in the air, he had always been told in his career that he needed to pound the ball into the ground and use his speed. Well, by lowering his hands, it was more about focusing on hitting line drives over the head of the middle infielders. And that in turn started to unlock some of his power. So, you know, he's a guy who is an elite defensive outfielder. And even if he only hit 220, he's the kind of guy that could carve out a long time big league career, but now he's a guy who has legitimate line drive power, maybe not totally over the fence power, but as he continues to mature, he's the kind of guy that could hit a few home runs. And with his elite defense, he could be a mainstay for a long time as he kind of finds his footing.
Yeah, he's off to a little bit of a slow start in his major league career, but I think he'll pick it up. He has the potential to be a pretty good player in this league. So,
hometown hero.
Yeah. Well, I think this is going to wrap it up here on Hit Here Talk. Thank you so much, Keaton, for joining us today and sharing your stories and sharing your insights. It was really fascinating to hear your story, your come up.
Yeah, you bet. And, you know, I'm telling these stories every night on the air, so people can tune in. We're on the TuneIn Radio app every night for free. There's a link we post on Twitter every night that's also for free to listen to. MILB TV is fairly cheap, so you can sign up for a subscription on that, and that's got the radio calls, and we'll have all the stories I'm telling every day. And people want to follow me on Twitter, at G-I-L-L-O-G-L-Y, my last name. I put out a lot of information there about these guys moving forward if people want to continue to follow the minor league prospects that come through Modesto.
If you like this episode of Hit It Here Talk, make sure to check us out on Spotify, TuneIn Radio, and anywhere else you can stream podcasts. Also, go check out Keaton Galogli on the Modesto Nets Radio Network, which you can find on TuneIn, or as you heard, you can also find him on Twitter. Thank you so much for listening today, and have a great rest of your day. Go Mariners!